Agreed to.
And that's how Thursday's House January 6 hearing ended. The video aired of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi recorded on January 6 was filmed by her daughter, the documentary filmmaker Alexandra Pelosi. It had never been publicly seen before yesterday. After the hearing, CNN aired additional footage shot by Alexandra of the House Speaker reacting to Donald Trump's speech at the Ellipse on January 6th.
And that's what this is all about.
Secret Service said they have dissuaded him from coming to Capitol Hill. They told him they don't have the resources to protect him here. So at the moment, he is not coming, but that could change.
Oh, he comes. I'm going to punch him out. This is my moment.
I would pay to see that.
I've been waiting for this, for trespassing on the Capitol grounds. I'm going to punch him out. I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be happy.
And that does it for our show. A happy belated birthday to Miguel Noguera, and a happy early birthday to Juan Gonzalez. And today is my precious pup's Zazu's second birthday. A very happy birthday to Zazu and her beloved twin brother, Kasha. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a video news production fellowship, an associate digital editor, and a people and culture manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Gusta, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen Honey, Masood, Mary Conlin, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Julie Staley. To Becca Staley, I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO every Friday at 5:30 p.m. for Counterspin, a show that provides a critical examination of major media stories and exposes what the mainstream media missed. Counterspin exposes and highlights censored stories, sexism, racism, and homophobia in the news, the power of corporate influence, gaffes and goofs by leading TV pundits, and more. That's every Friday at 5:30 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon's candidates for governor tell us their positions on firearms. A Vancouver public school employee is arrested and charged with multiple counts of voyeurism. And, in U.S. news, the South faces huge teacher shortages. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 14th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Oregonian gubernatorial candidates dramatically differ in their views on appropriate citizen access to firearms, according to an Oregon Public Broadcasting survey sent to all three nominees. Democratic nominee Tina Kotek said she supports policies keeping guns away from people who want to hurt themselves or others, believes the legal age to buy some firearms should be raised from 18 to 21, wants a requirement for safety training, and supports limiting the sale of high-capacity magazines. Kotek wrote in her answers, quote, "As governor, I will push to invest in locally driven, evidence-based violence prevention programs," end quote. Unaffiliated candidate and former Democratic State Senator Betsy Johnson said she thinks more needs to be done to keep guns away from people who should not have them. Johnson's platform stands in contrast to her voting record in the Oregon Senate. Johnson said she would support a stronger background check system, but in 2015, she voted against expanding background checks to cover private sales. Johnson also said she supports raising the age to buy some firearms from 18 to 21. Johnson said, quote, "I'm the only candidate for governor who could lead a reasonable, productive conversation that combines mental health, social services, law enforcement, and gun safety," end quote. In her poll responses, Johnson wrote she has practical solutions to keep guns away from those who should not have them. As a senator, she did vote against attempts to limit access. In 2017, she voted against the state's extreme risk protection order legislation called a red flag law, which would allow immediate family or roommates to petition a judge to remove someone's guns if they posed a risk to themselves or others. Johnson was the only Democrat to vote against the legislation, which passed by a thin margin. In 2021, Johnson also voted against the state's safe storage law, which bans guns from the state capitol in some schools and requires gun owners to secure their firearms when not in use. Republican nominee Christine Drazen's response was quite limited. She said, quote, "Oregon already has among the strictest gun laws in the nation. We must fully enforce existing laws to ensure that guns are not in the hands of criminals and the public is protected," end quote. In a previous interview with the Bend Bulletin, Drazen focused on the large increase in shootings seen in Portland. She called for more law enforcement presence. Drazen also said she thinks the state's red flag law lacks due process and that she'd change it if elected. Drazen voted against the safe storage law. More recently, Drazen has embraced some of the hardline groups she previously repudiated. Far-right organizer and former militia leader B.J. Soper recently appeared alongside her at a campaign event. Soper participated in the 2015 Sugar Pine standoff alongside the Oath Keepers militia and the 2016 armed occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. California recently enacted a law that allows private citizens to sue gun manufacturers for producing guns banned in the state. It is intended to help skirt the gun industry's unique federal immunity, which protects manufacturers from liability when their products are used to commit crimes. Each candidate was asked if they would support a similar law. Kotek said she would. Drazen and Johnson both said they would not. Voters have another opportunity to address firearm access and safety. They will be voting on ballot measure 114, a proposal that would ban high-capacity magazines and require a completed background check and safety course to buy a firearm. It does not ban any firearms or limit the number of guns Oregonians can purchase. Kotek said she endorsed the measure, which she called common sense. Johnson said measure 114 was, quote, "an attempt by the far left to take as many guns as they can away from law-abiding gun owners," end quote. Drazen similarly does not support the measure. A Vancouver public school staff member has been charged with nearly 140 counts of voyeurism. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade has more on the story.
A Vancouver public schools employee was arrested Thursday following an alleged voyeurism incident that was reported to the Clark County's Sheriff's Office last week. Faculty at the Alki Middle School reported the incident, saying a staff member had videotaped female students in the school's locker room. Detectives served a search warrant on October 5th at the suspect's home, where several items were seized. James Mattson, who is 38, has been charged with 137 counts of voyeurism in the first degree. Among the items seized from Mattson's home were computers, cell phones, 20 thumb drives, 25 SD cards, and 14 mini SD cards. According to police records, videos taken in female staff bathrooms at Skyview High School were found, some dating back to 2013. As the investigation continues, authorities say it appears likely evidence will turn up implicating Mattson in the Alki Middle School incident. Mattson had access to several buildings in the district, including both Alki and Skyview schools, which are adjacent to one another. Following his arrest, spokespeople from Vancouver Public Schools say that bathrooms and locker rooms at all buildings Mattson had access to have been scrutinized for any further evidence of other possible voyeurism incidents. Mattson was a custodian and building operator for the district and has worked in various schools in the region since 2007, also serving as Alki's assistant flag football coach since 2021. His first court appearance facing the mounting charges was this morning in Clark County Superior Court, where a judge set bail for $500,000. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
TriMet wants to put forward a new plan, adding bus lines to low-income neighborhoods, despite a significant recent shortage of riders. Here's KBOO's Jeffrey Wade again to tell us more.
TriMet is currently at work drafting plans to overhaul its bus service with aims at increasing ridership in an equitable way while asking the public for their opinion on how the transit giant can improve its overall service. The new plan, called Forward Together, will add bus lines to low-income neighborhoods and to surrounding suburban areas, decrease service in affluent low-ridership neighborhoods, and increase frequent service schedules to at least 10 lines. TriMet is asking the public to weigh in on Forward Together, either by taking an online survey from its website or by attending one of six open houses the agency is hosting this month. Public transit was a sector that faced dramatic changes during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, with data showing a 60% drop in TriMet riders in April of 2020. At present, ridership is only up to 50% compared to pre-pandemic numbers, as many workplaces have adopted hybrid work-from-home plans to accommodate COVID precautions. Forward Together will affect at least 80 bus lines across the greater Portland area, with research suggesting that these changes could increase bus service to 50,000 or more people who travel to work and add weekend service to 100,000 more people. Additional lines and increased service will be focused on TriMet's grid pattern for East Multnomah County and Washington County. The costs to implement Forward Together are yet to be determined, but TriMet officials maintain the plan was developed within current constraints of the agency's budget. Additional funding will be provided by Oregon House Bill 2017, a major state transportation package that passed in 2017. Depending on feedback received from the community, TriMet hopes to fully implement Forward Together within the next 5 years, with immediate priorities focused on ending the agency's current operator shortage. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
The January 6th committee wants to talk to former President Trump. They issued their official subpoena yesterday. With more on the story, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have left no doubt, none, that Donald Trump led an effort to upend American democracy that directly resulted in the violence of January 6th.
January 6th Committee Chair Congressman Benny Thompson says it's their obligation to seek Trump's testimony, as the committee voted unanimously to subpoena the former president. After a year-long investigation reviewing thousands of interviews and pages of documents, Vice Chair Congresswoman Liz Cheney says they've confirmed that Trump knew his claims that the 2020 election was stolen were false, arguing against the possibility he was duped or rational as he continued to make fraud allegations.
No president can defy the rule of law and act this way in a constitutional republic, period.
Also on Thursday, the Supreme Court rejected Trump's request to step into the legal fight over documents the FBI seized from his Mar-a-Lago estate. The court did not explain its reasoning for declining the request, which would have permitted his attorneys the ability to review the most sensitive records the FBI collected during its investigation. Inflation rose 0.4% in September and 8.2% over the past 12 months, with the core consumer price index reaching its highest level in 40 years.
A lot of people are hurting these days. Today's report shows, though, some progress. Overall, inflation was 2% over the last 3 months. That's down from 11% over the prior 3 months. That's progress.
President Joe Biden said the Inflation Reduction Act will help to lower costs and argued that inflation will rise if Republicans take control of Congress. The president also noted he plans to speak about bringing down high gas prices next week. Saudi Arabia claims the Biden administration urged the country to delay cutting oil production by 1 month, putting it behind the midterm elections. The Saudi government, which heads the OPEC oil conglomerate, rejected appeals from the U.S. to delay cutting oil production, potentially causing gas prices to spike ahead of Election Day. As the NATO military alliance in Russia hold nuclear exercises in the next few days, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Russian President Vladimir Putin would be crossing a very important line if he were to order the use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine.
Russia's nuclear rhetoric is dangerous, reckless, and they know that if they use nuclear weapon against Ukraine, it will have severe consequences.
13 people have been killed and 37 others wounded in the past 24 hours as the result of Russian attacks throughout the country. After a Florida jury recommended life without the possibility of parole on all counts against Parkland school shooter Nicholas Cruz, Ilhan Aldehef and other parents expressed disbelief and outrage that it wasn't the death penalty.
I pray that that animal suffers every day of his life in jail, and he should have a short life.
The judge will issue the final sentence November 1st. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Schools across the United States are faced with teacher shortages. Some institutions in the South are turning to candidates without teaching certificates or formal training. Alabama administrators have been hiring educators with emergency certifications, often in low-income and majority black neighborhoods. Texas allowed about 1 in 5 new teachers to instruct without certification last school year. In Oklahoma, a special program allows schools to hire applicants without teacher training if they meet a local board's qualifications. And in Florida, military veterans without a bachelor's degree can teach for up to 5 years using temporary certificates. School boards and trustees struggle with the decision whether or not to use less traditional teachers. The trade-off is having very large classes or ones led by substitute teachers. An analysis of 2019-20 data in 11 southern states found about 4% of teachers were uncertified or were teaching with an emergency certification. In addition, 10% were teaching classes in areas they were not certified in. Projections show that by 2030, as many as 16 million K-12 students in the region may be taught by an unprepared or inexperienced teacher. Many states have loosened requirements since the COVID-19 pandemic started. However, nearly all states have had emergency or provisional licenses that allow less experienced people to teach for some time. The U.S. Department of Education reported around 2016 that 1.7% of all teachers did not have full certification. It went up to roughly 3% in schools that serve students of color, as well as schools in high poverty areas. Poorer areas simply cannot compete with the higher salaries offered in more affluent districts. Some groups worry about inconsistent teacher expectations, but also abilities. Certification helps set professional standards to ensure teachers have content expertise as well as the ability to engage students. Dallas Schools trustee Maxie Johnson said, quote, "I've seen what happens when you don't have teachers in the classroom. I've seen the struggle. I'd rather have someone that my principal has vetted, that my principal believes in, that can get the job done." End quote. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 85. Multnomah County's air quality advisory will be extended through Monday at 5 p.m. Wildfires in the region plus the expected weather means smoky, unhealthy air through the weekend. People are advised to limit outdoor activity and keep children inside if it's smoky. Today in history, in 1979, the first National March on Washington for lesbian and gay rights attracts 100,000 marchers. The quote of the day is from American poet E.E. Cummings, who was born today in 1894. Cummings wrote, "It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are." Documentary Conversion is showing this weekend at the Portland Film Festival. It follows the journey of 5 conversion therapy survivors as they grapple with the mental and physical impacts of the practice. KBOO's Althea Billing spoke with the director and one of the survivors featured in the film.
Conversion is a documentary following the journey of 5 survivors of conversion therapy across the U.S. and Canada as they move through the mental and physical fallout of ending conversion therapy. Conversion therapy, broadly speaking, is any attempt to change one's sexuality or gender identity through spiritual or psychological interventions. It's not supported by science, and LGBTQ youth that experience conversion therapy are almost twice as likely to think about suicide compared to peers that haven't experienced it. Zach Miners is the director and executive producer of Conversion. He was inspired first to make a 5-minute PSA after finding out that his conversion therapist was still practicing.
Yeah, so in 2018, I found out that my former conversion therapist was still practicing, and I was pretty shocked by that. And so I always thought maybe someone else would speak up and tell their story. You know, I'm a filmmaker, own a production company, so I thought, well, what can I do? I can make a 5-minute PSA.
Miners also saw an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, where drag queen Dusty Ray Bottoms candidly discussed their experience with conversion therapy. Miners reached out, and Dusty Ray, or Dustin Rayburn, agreed to help with a documentary project.
I was on season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I got to share my experience with conversion therapy on the national platform.
Hearing someone talk about that on a national platform was really empowering. Over time, it turned from a five-minute PSA into a full hour-and-a-half-long feature film.
You know, I would talk to people about my experience with conversion therapy before RuPaul's Drag Race, and people would kind of look at me funny and, like, give me a smile and shake their head because they didn't understand where I was coming from. They couldn't sympathize with me. But after sharing my experience on a national platform, getting to hear from Zach Miners and so many people around the world, it was the first time that I heard a Me Too with this experience, and it was very eye-opening and made me feel so not alone in the process. So I knew this was something that I had to do with Zach. I had to share my story on a much larger scale.
The documentary covers a wide array of conversion therapy experiences through five survivors. They range in age and type, but come down to the same factors.
A lot of people think that conversion therapy does not happen today. And they think that because of, you know, well, I live in a liberal state, surely this doesn't happen. But the truth is, conversion therapy is happening everywhere, and it's not just conservative Christian kids. I mean, that is a lot of it, but it's also adults. It's also, you know, moms and, you know, people that you might not think of necessarily as someone going through this. And conversion therapy has so many different forms.
The physical aversion therapy, and I'll move quickly through it because it's very traumatizing to relive it, included heat and ice and electricity. Trying to associate those horribly painful things with imagery of men who were either touching or having sex with men.
Mine is in the form of an exorcism. It actually happened when I was 20, so I was an adult. I happened to be very vulnerable and at my lowest point, so I was desperate enough to try anything just to get the acceptance of my family. And this exorcism and this route of conversion therapy was something that we felt at the time was the right thing to do.
I believed them. I believed in the lie.
Like, if you have problems, that's why. The problem is you.
The reason I deserved this loneliness and this disease was because my God no longer loved me.
You're not worthy of God's blessings.
You'll never be successful. You'll never find love. You'll never find happiness.
Sometimes I wonder, why am I thinking this? Or why do I hate myself so much? Or why am I having these thoughts? It's like, oh no, you were taught that. This was how they wanted you to feel.
Miners says he wants the movie to be what he would have needed as a 14-year-old getting put through conversion therapy.
Yes, it's about conversion therapy, but it's also about autonomy and about how you can be your true self, which applies no matter what your gender or sexual identity is, and how people try to force those things on you that in the end are not helpful and in many cases can be very harmful. The target audience I always thought back to was, what would I have needed to see at 14? That would have helped me see the cracks, that would have helped me, because I was in it at 14 and I stayed in that mindset until I was almost 26. So how do we help people come out of that faster so that they can live a happy, productive life?
Rayburn says it's a film that has value for all groups.
I think everyone should see this documentary. I think there is something to learn for everyone. You can learn about conversion therapy, and hopefully, if you don't know about it, you'll want to join us to end this across the America and the world. And hopefully, if you are a queer person who is struggling with owning who they are and maybe going through conversion therapy, I hope that they can see this film and know that they're not alone and that they're beautiful and perfect just the way they are, and to get out of this as fast as they can.
The documentary Conversion premieres this Saturday, October 15th at 12:30 p.m. at the Portland Film Festival at Purple Shore Crab Theater. That'll be followed by a panel discussion with the survivors featured in the film. Additional screenings throughout the festival can be found online at pdxff.com. Also online is an extended cut of my interview with Zach Miners and Dustin Rayburn, where we cover more of the specifics of the film and their individual experiences. That's online at kbu.fm/eveningnews. For KBU News, I'm Althea Billings.
Tribal colleges in North Dakota get $14 million for apprenticeship programs. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Tribal colleges across North Dakota are making plans to boost apprentice opportunities with the help of a $14 million donation. Mike Moen reports.
The money was donated by a trio of private energy companies, with most coming from the Hess Corporation. The funds will be distributed to the state's five tribal colleges to implement an approach that fits the needs of each school and the native populations in their areas. Cynthia Lindquist, president of Chankadeska Chikana Community College, says it might open the door to traditional apprenticeships, such as in construction trades, but they hope to provide pathways to other professions with specific skill sets.
What do rural communities really need to stay viable? Who are staying in our rural communities, not just Indian Country, but rural in general? And what are the employment opportunities? So things like cybersecurity, which affects us all in many, many different ways.
She says creating more career paths in tribal areas might also help reduce the need for government assistance for people who haven't seen enough job opportunities. Leaders involved in the initiative say implementation is expected in January of next year. Chankadeska's apprenticeships will focus on early childhood education and social work. Combined, North Dakota's tribal colleges serve roughly 3,500 students, and Lindquist says nearly 10% are non-Native Americans. She feels this can really give rural students from all backgrounds more choices about shaping their future.
What are they really interested in doing and or becoming? Is it part of a normal or a typical pathway, both for college, for a degree, and or for jobs? And can a niche be built around that if they want to stay local, they want to stay home?
Students who participate can develop on-the-job skills as they complete a two-year degree or technical certification, with the possibility of earning a bachelor's or master's degree, depending on the apprenticeship position and location.
That was Mike Moen reporting. In Native Vote News, the All Pueblo Council of Governors in New Mexico is hosting a nonpartisan candidate forum for congressional and state seats. Pueblo leaders have invited Democratic and Republican candidates for congressional districts to take part in Friday's forum in Albuquerque. The key state seat is for governor of New Mexico. Leaders have invited current Democratic Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham and Republican challenger Mark Ronchetti. Tribal leaders have also invited candidates seeking Secretary of State, Treasurer, and Public Lands Commissioner. Top tribal issues are water, sacred site protection, education, healthcare, and economic development. The El Pueblo Council of Governors represents the 19 pueblos in New Mexico and one in Texas. Early and absentee voting started Tuesday in New Mexico. The four-hour Pueblo Governors Forum will be held late afternoon at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and will be streamed online. The Ute Indian Tribe in Utah is critical of President Biden's designation of the Camp Hell Continental Divide National Monument. Biden established the monument during a ceremony this week in north central Colorado. In a press statement, the Ute tribe called the designation an unlawful act of genocide. The tribe says it was not properly consulted and claims the Ute tribe was excluded from the event. The area in Colorado is traditional Ute tribe homeland. The band was forced off the land in the 1800s by the U.S. government. The Ute Indian Tribe Business Committee is condemning the White House move, saying the administration talks about tribal consultation, but the actions do not match. Other tribal leaders were reportedly at Biden's event, including from the other two Ute tribes, which have reservations in Colorado. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture plans to enforce a law put forward more than 100 years ago aimed at protecting suppliers from major meatpacking corporations. Nadia Ramlagan has more on that story.
The USDA is finalizing rules aimed at increasing protections for contract farmers who grow the nation's poultry and cattle for giant meatpacking corporations. Supporters of the changes say they'll result in fairer pay for farmers and reduce deceptive and discriminatory industry practices, particularly against farmers of color. Aaron Johnson with Rural Advancement Foundation International USA explains the rules involve updating transparency standards in the poultry industry and leveling the field for contract farmers to publicly advocate for better deals or speak out to the media on unfair practices.
Most poultry growers, the vast majority of poultry growers, they don't own the chickens that are on their farm. Really what the farmer is providing is the labor to take care of the chickens while they're on the farm.
Johnson points out livestock and poultry companies have a hard lobbying grip in Washington, noting that a decade ago, the USDA attempted similar reforms but was blocked by Congress in finalizing or implementing them. Opponents of the new rules say they could harm industry efforts to improve sustainability. Johnson explains meatpacking corporations currently offer advantages to certain contract farmers over others, and with little oversight.
The law is going to be updated to protect growers from deceptive contract terms or from contracts that hide future provisions like future requirements or upgrades.
He notes four mammoth corporations, JBS Foods, Marfrig, Seaboard, and Tyson Foods, control 85% of all meatpacking operations in the U.S. This is Nadia Ramlagan for North Carolina News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 14th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast included Jeffrey Wade and Althea Billings. The co-producers are Althea Billings and myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Nadia Ramlagan, Antonia Gonzalez, and Mary Sherman. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.